Hello and welcome to Talking Tudors, a fortnightly podcast about the ever-fascinating Tudor dynasty. My name is Natalie Gruniger and I'll be your host and guide on this journey through 16th century England. Are you ready to step through the veil of time into the dazzling and dangerous world of the Tudor court? Without further ado, it's time to talk Tudors. Everyone, welcome back to Talking Tudors episode 20. I'm your host, Natalie Gruniger. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the wonderful patrons who are very generously pledged to support this podcast. A very hearty thank you to Andy, Joanna, Christina, Sharon, Jenny, Julie, Noel, and Reluca. If you love Talking Tudors and would like to show your appreciation and support the work I do, just click on the Be My Patron on Podbean badge on the homepage of my website, www.onthetudortrail.com, or click on the Be a Patron button on the Podbean app. Now, on to today's episode. I'm thrilled that joining me today to talk about Anne Boleyn's letter from the Tower is Sandra Vasoli. Sandra grew up in a suburb of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. As a child, she developed an abiding interest in objects and stories from a long-ago era, historic houses, antiques, period clothes, and tales from the past. A passionate reader and enthusiastic writer, she also spent her formative years caring for her dogs and riding horses. She earned degrees in biology and English from Villanueva University and then pursued graduate work in organizational development during her long career in human resources. After leaving the corporate world, Vasoli wrote and published her debut novel, Struck with the Dart of Love, Jeanne Boleyn. Uniquely positioned as Anne Boleyn's memoir, it is the story of the tumultuous relationship between Boleyn and Henry VIII of England. With a deep appreciation for meticulous research, Vasoli was permitted rare access to the Papal Library at the Vatican to read and study the original love letters penned in the 16th century by Henry VIII to his second wife, Anne Boleyn. She's also done extensive research in the British Library, viewing the beautiful Book of Hours in which Henry and Anne both inscribed lovers' messages to each other and documents attributed to a mysterious letter apparently written by Boleyn while she was imprisoned in the Tower before her execution. The result of that research has been published in Anne Boleyn's Letter from the Tower, A New Assessment. She continues to research this letter and other artifacts authored or owned by Queen Anne Boleyn. My conversation with Sandy straight after this short musical break, courtesy of guitarist John Sales. Sandy, welcome to Talking Tudors. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm delighted to be here with you today, Natalie, and the Talking Tudors audience. So thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks so much. Now, I think lots of the listeners know that I record this from my leafy suburb in southern Sydney, but where are you recording this from, Sandy?
I live just outside the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on the east coast of the USA.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
It's cold in winter. They're going to be snowing later this week.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here in my singlet top, you know, ready for a 30 plus degree day. That's Celsius, by the way, Sandy, not Fahrenheit, Celsius.
That's right.
All right,
Awesome.
fabulous. Now, I'd love it if you could talk to us just a little bit about your background and maybe tell us how your love of the Tudors began.
Sure, I would love to. Actually, my background was in science and English. That's what my university degrees are in. And I started out being a scientist in a pharmaceutical company, ended up being in an executive in human resources for one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. And I did that for many, many years. And when I retired, I decided I wanted to write about Anne. So here we
Wow.
are, some years later.
That's fantastic. Now, you're the author of two excellent novels, which I absolutely love, about Anne Boleyn. They're Struck with the Dart of Love and Truth Endures. Could you tell us a little bit about these books and what inspired you to write them?
Surely. And thank you for the compliment. That's very
That's
sweet of
okay.
you. I had been interested, and I know that we said, how did I become interested in the Tudors? I've been interested in them for many years, and specifically Anne Boleyn, which it is kind of a mysterious thing. There are so many people around the globe who have such a fascination with her. And it does bring you to wonder why. And I was certainly one of them. And when I had read so much, m many of the novels and many books about her, and when I retired from my, corporate career, I thought, oh, now I can read, whatever I want to read about her. And I'm going to the library and I'm looking, and I wanted something really personal. Why did she wear what she wore? Why did she think what she thought? Why did she make the decisions that she did? And I couldn't really find it. And so I thought, oh, I'm retired. I could write it. I was really naive. 6 years later, I ended up with, the manuscript, which we decided to split into two. So, that was essentially how that came about. It was originally going to be just about Anne and her thoughts, but it eventually became about the love story between Anne and Henry. And that's what it really is centered on.
All right, thank you. Fabulous. Now, you're also the author of another fascinating book, which I love as well. This one's a non-fiction book, so it's called Anne Boleyn's Letters. Anne Boleyn's Letter from the Tower, A New Assessment, in which you investigate the provenance and authenticity of a very poignant and powerful letter held in the British Library that, according to some, Anne Boleyn actually wrote to her husband, Henry VIII, on the 6th of May, 1536, from the Tower of London. Now, many modern historians consider this letter to be a forgery. So why do you feel, or did you feel, that it merited a really thorough investigation?
It's such an excellent question. And, as I was researching for the Anne Boleyn novels, I mean, early on, I discovered that the only way to really write an authentic novel like that historical novel is that you have to look at the original sources. You've got to look at original documents. You have to make up your own mind and your own
Very true,
decisions about what was written and how they were placed contextually in history. So, as I went through, I started looking at original documents. I went to the British Library. I was able to take a look at the beautiful Book of Hours that Anne and Henry both wrote in.
Oh, how wonderful.
Oh, it was so amazing. Just really amazing to look at it and think their DNA was in there, was on there. It was powerful. And what was really powerful for me there was that the story that I had always heard about that book, when I looked at it, didn't ring true to me. And I won't go off on a tangent about what I did think happened, but I realized these documents have their own tale to tell. So, in the progression of looking at Anne's life, I came upon the time about, when she purportedly wrote this letter. I was going back to England. I wanted to go into the British Library and do research, and I thought, what can I look at? And I thought about that letter and I thought, well, let me see what I can find about it. And as you said, there's such a diversity of opinion about it. That makes it even more intriguing, I
Yes,
think.
it does,
And
yeah.
so when I got to the library, the digging that I did just, I mean, it just kind of one thing led me to another. It was a little crazy. It's almost like it wanted to lead me in different directions
Yeah.
and so followed.
I can imagine that you fell into a very deep rabbit hole, which is what happens when I start looking at these sorts of
It
things.
is. It's you go down that hole and you can get
Oh.
very, very absorbed. But this one was really like very, very telling, very fascinating.
Okay. Now, for our listeners that perhaps aren't so familiar with this particular letter, I know that you and I know it quite well. Do you think you could just summarize the contents of the letter and maybe just touch on its overall tone and the message?
Yes, definitely. It's one of those things that when I first read the text of it, I thought it was very moving. But every time I read this letter, it almost gives me goosebumps, frankly. It's just there's something about it that speaks to me in a really incredible way. And I know you said you were going to post the full text
Yes, I'd love
for
to do that. Yes, on the
folks
show
to
notes,
be able to
definitely.
read. But I will just give you a pull out a few things. So let's just, step back for a second and review what we know about Anne. We know that she was very intelligent. We know that she was multilingual. We
Yes.
know she educated in France. And we know that she was really assertive. It's what Henry loved about her. She positioned herself in a way that, she was, and I know people will dispute this, but in a way, she certainly was a modern woman. She wanted to have her voice be heard, especially once she achieved a level of power and of influence. So those things carry through, I think. They certainly carried through from every report that we have, until her death, and even on the scaffold. And so when you look at the content of this, to me, it just rings so true that it would have been her composition. And the first sentence begins with, "Sir, your grace's displeasure and my imprisonment are things so strange unto me as what to write or what to excuse, I am altogether ignorant." And I just think that statement is like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
What,
that just gave
why
me
am I
goosebumps.
here?
Goodness.
Why on earth am I here? And she then goes on to say, you sent somebody who you knew was my professed enemy, which, by the way, I think the contingent sent to arrest her was orchestrated by Cromwell, but we'll talk a little bit more about that. Which it was her uncle who they had had great discord throughout her reign. And she said, but I understand by the accusation that I conceive your meaning. I understand why I'm here. And if you think confessing a truth may procure my safety, I will confess my truth with willingness and duty, perform your command. So then she, the next paragraph, she talks about how loyal she's been to him. Never a prince had wife more loyal in all duty and in all true affection than you have ever found in Anne Boleyn. A lot of people stop here and say she would have never referred to herself as Anne Boleyn. I completely disagree. I think that she was speaking to her husband as the woman that he knew when he met her, not like, I am the queen and I will tell you this is, I am Anne Boleyn. With which name and place I would willingly have contented myself if God and your grace's pleasure had been so pleased. So I was Anne, I would have stayed Anne, but you selected me. And so now I'm speaking to you as Anne. And then she talks about how he raised her from a low estate to be a queen. And the reason he did that was because of love, not because she was a princess of the blood, which she's well aware of, that they loved each other. And she then on the second, you know, in a few paragraphs down, is really something that I think is just also super powerful. She says, but if you have already, and she talks about her innocence, but then she says, but you have already determined of me, and that not only my death, but an infamous slander, with capitals, infamous slander, must bring you the enjoying of your desired happiness, which she had also said in the paragraph before, she knew that he was having a relationship.
She knew about Jane already,
She knew about Jane. Mm. So if you think that not only my death, but you have to slander me, will bring you the enjoyment of your happiness, then I desire of God that he will pardon your great sin therein, and likewise my enemies, and that he will not call you to a strict account for your unprincely and cruel usage of me at his general judgment seat. She says, where, by the way, both you and myself must shortly appear. Like we're both going to be before our And I know that I am clear, but I fear for you because you are accusing me wrongly.
Gosh.
And the last paragraph is so poignant because she's begging for mercy for those who have been accused. No. Her brother, her friends, his friends, the dearest people who had surrounded them. You know, my last and only request shall be that myself may only bear the burden of your grace's displeasure, and that it may not touch the innocent souls. And her last sentence, this is the one that tells me that it had to have been from a wife to a husband. If ever I have found favor in your sight, if ever the name of Anne Boleyn hath been pleasing in your ears, then let me obtain this request, and I will never trouble you anymore. She's saying, I know you loved me. If ever you loved me, then why won't you, you know, why won't you grant me the request of releasing the others? So,
goodness, it makes it all the more tragic, doesn't it, really?
It does. It's
heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. And those words, I mean, I look at this and I think, I just can't picture somebody else writing this if it were her.
Well, it does beg the question, doesn't it? If not Anne, then who?
And who?
Who would have written it? I don't understand.
Why? And that's the whole thing about, you know, is it a forgery? I think, well, to what end? Like, who would have forged this, and for what purpose? A monetary purpose? We know it was never sold, and then we're getting into the what I think to be the provenance of it. It was never sold for any money.
Right,
it was never used to exact any kind of, you know, retribution or support. So, you know,
Absolutely fascinating. Now, Sandy, what if the postscript, I know there's a postscript found on the opposite side of the main letter, which we've discussed briefly previously in our correspondence. What does this actually tell us?
So this is really interesting because, and let me just say that there's so much confusion about this letter because there are copies
that are
old, but not as old as this letter. I have actually worked with and am in the process of working with some paleography experts, people who studied manuscripts and writing of this era. So somebody who is a professor emeritus at Cambridge has verified that this writing of the original document, which is in the British Library, is of the early 1500s.
Wow.
So we know. Now, there are copies that are somewhat later, 100 years later, some even later than that. And a lot of those copies don't have this postscript.
Okay, I see, yeah.
So when you turn the letter over, and you, well, you, which you're not allowed to handle it because it's really like, you know, tissue paper. But the digital copy that you, that can be seen of it, on the reverse side, in the same hand, same handwriting, says, after her signature, which, you know, her signature was from your most loyal and, you know, wife, your most loyal and faithful wife, Anne Boleyn. There's a little space. And then it says, the king sending a message to Queen Anne, being prisoner in the tower, willing her to confess the truth. She said she could confess no more than she had already spoken, and she said she must conceal nothing from the king, to whom she did acknowledge herself so much bound for so many favors, for raising her first from a mean woman to be a marquess, next to be his queen, and now, seeing he could bestow no further honor upon her on earth, for purposing to make her by martyrdom a saint in heaven. Gosh. So that statement is known. I mean, people do know that she threw that out at him, but I don't think it's realized often that it was on the reverse.
On the same letter, yeah, that's right.
Right. And the fact that it was written in the same hand causes me to kind of further the theory that I have about it, that somebody went to the tower on Cromwell's instruction to take her dictation.
Yeah. Yep.
And they went there also saying, you have one last chance.
Yeah.
The truth. And she is saying, the king, and it says the king sending a message to Queen Anne, she's saying she could confess no more than she had already spoken.
My goodness, this is intriguing. All right, so if we have, you know, I know you're still working on this, so we know that you've got obviously an expert in handwriting, as you've said, who's quite certain that this is, you know, was written in the 1500s, early 1500s. Then if it wasn't Anne, it was one of her contemporaries, right, or maybe someone just after her death or something like that, which again, you wonder why, what's the point,
right,
what's going on. So that's very interesting, isn't it? That's just, yeah, wow, this is amazing.
It totally is.
All right, now during Anne's imprisonment, William Kingston, which was the constable of the Tower at the time, he was tasked with keeping Thomas Cromwell informed, obviously, of Anne's behaviour and her state of mind, and, you know, there are reports that he wrote. So how many of these letters have actually survived, and what do they reveal about Anne's time in the Tower?
It is really interesting. So we know that Cromwell was in command of Kingston and the whole imprisonment of Anne. And he commanded Kingston to take notes of anything that went on or anything that she uttered and communicate that back to him. So there are five letters that we know of. And the content of them also can be found in the letters and papers document that is available online, so you can see the content. Four of them are also in the British Library, and they also have the they also have the fire damage that Anne's letter. So how did they get into the collection in the British Library? I don't exactly know. I haven't done a lot of study of that, but I do believe that they were held by Cromwell, and that's then somehow they made it. And I can definitely speak to how I think Anne's letter made it in there. But there is a lot of really telling information in his letters. And one aspect that I think is really, really noteworthy and has driven some of my theory is that in one of the letters, it might be the second or possibly the third, Kingston references Anne's desire to compose a letter. So very early on, she asked, I would like to see my husband, the king.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kingston must have inquired of Cromwell, who said, absolutely not. No, she's not going to see him. And so then she asked to compose a letter. And his quote in his letter to Cromwell says that she said to him, I shall desire you to bear a letter from me to Master Secretary. And then I said, meaning Kingston, Madam, tell it me by word of mouth, and I will do it. And so gave me thanks, saying, I have much marvel, this is interesting, that the king's counsel comes not to me. So we know there that she asked to write a letter. We know that Kingston said, you dictate it, and I will be sure that it gets there.
Yep.
And then she says, Cromwell never came to visit her.
No.
So he did. We know he came to the tower, and the Kingston letters were handed to him.
Right.
But he never came to Anne.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. It is. And the question is why?
Why? Yes. Why, Master right. Cromwell? Did you not see Anne? Gosh.
Right.
Goodness. All right. Now, it just came to mind, and I thought I'd just mention it, that I was recently having some discussions with Lauren Mackay, which has written a really fantastic biography of Thomas and George Boleyn. And I know that this is also disputed, but not long after Anne's execution, Cromwell did write a letter to Eustace Chapuis, where he said that he basically thought up the whole thing against the Boleyns. So it's very interesting. And he does say that, I forget the exact word, I'll put the link in the show notes, but I'm trying to think of something. He basically said he imagined the whole thing. So he's come up with it only after he knew that this is what the king wanted, though. We have to always remember that. Cromwell was a highly, incredibly intelligent man, and he would not have done anything had he not thought that this was what Henry wanted, Henry's will. So it's very interesting that he didn't go to see Anne, because I wonder if in a way there was that guilt. He had just thought, you know, this is his idea. He sort of, you know, imagined all of this, and he admitted that later on to Eustace Chapuis. Yeah. And I wonder if it had something to do with, had he faced her, obviously she knows she's innocent, he knows she's innocent, it would have been quite an awkward confrontation, wouldn't it?
And it's very interesting. So I think slightly more than awkward, and I just, so we know that we recently have Dr. McCulloch's book that's just about Thomas Cromwell.
Mm-hmm.
And I will admit that I'm not all the way through the book. And
no,
I have,
me either, I know.
it's pretty,
it's a
very
big book.
Involved. It's a meaty book. It's fantastic. But I find that he feels that Anne and Cromwell were never allies.
Right.
That they always were adversaries, that they kind of made nice with each other at court. Mm-hmm. And as things progressed, and certainly as the year 1536 turned, they were really at odds, really at odds. And then we have the situation in which Cromwell was aligning himself with Chapuis, and you know, Chapuis was wanting him to negotiate with Henry for the kind of return of Princess Mary, and there was a meeting that took place between Chapuis and Cromwell and Henry, and Cromwell did his best maneuvering, and Henry lambasted him and absolutely would not hear any of it, and Cromwell was furious and had to leave the room. And what is reported by Dr. McCulloch is that after that was the period of time when Cromwell stated that he was ill and that returned to his home. But during that period of time, it's believed that that is when he orchestrated the downfall of Anne. And yes, I think he was riding on bad feelings that Henry may have had, but there are also reports that there were periods of time when Henry and Anne were good together. He was planning a trip to Calais with her. And so, you know, fanning the flames, working with what happened, my belief is that this was the mastermind and plan of Thomas Cromwell. And that's why he could not go to see her. So
very interesting. I know we won't. But this is a whole other podcast, isn't it?
Because it is.
You know, so we won't go any further into that. But it's just intriguing. It's fascinating, and I know people have different theories, and some people, you know, do kind of let Henry off the hook, which I'm starting. You know,
You can't really let.
No, I think yes, I agree with you. Thomas Cromwell played a huge part in this, and yes, I think he orchestrated the details. Although we have to also keep in mind that that Anne did also herself kind of, when she was in the Tower, of course, in that state of mind. She gave him. Really, she handed it to him on a platter when she started talking about her conversation with Sir Henry Norris. So obviously Cromwell had something in mind, but whether he had all the finer details, I don't know, you know.
Right.
She did incriminate herself, unfortunately.
Right. I don't think that he had the fine details. And in fact, you know, orchestrating her downfall may certainly not have meant her death.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right. That's what I'm,
you know, at court, it's either going to be her or me.
Yeah.
And how can I move her away to survive myself and to achieve what I feel like I need to achieve for the king's purpose?
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, it certainly, I think people will agree today that it became a perfect storm of events.
Oh, yes. There is no doubting that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Sandy. I know we could talk about that forever, couldn't we? Maybe we have to do an episode on that. The downfall of Anne Boleyn. How did it happen? Do you think you could talk to us about the day that you visited the British Library and got to see an image or the digital image of the letter? And I know you explained already that it's too fragile to actually handle.
Right.
And you saw some other documents there as well, I believe. And what did you find? That you found something that really inspired you to continue your investigation, really fueled the fire?
Yes. So, you know, I went and the first thing that I did was put in my request to see if I could see the actual original document. And the archivists there are very lovely and very helpful. They said, no, you know, we can't take it out of storage. It's too fragile, but we can give you a digital copy for you to look at. So I did look at that. And then I started doing investigating, which I had done prior to my visit. But while I was there and the archivist on duty was helping me, what other documents had anything to do with this? And I was shocked and surprised that things came up.
Wow.
I saw copies of the letter, one that was seemingly the earliest copy, I believe, that has been made. And I later found that it was written out by a very famous scribe called the Feathery Scribe.
Okay.
And that became a clue in looking at the provenance. I found other documents that were in like compendia of letters and, you know, writings of early antiquarians. And it just, the things that I found just compelled me to continue. So what I did that day was gather as much as I could, write down and copy as much as I could. That was kind of back when they really were not allowing you to do much photographing. They will allow you to photograph certain documents, but you know, my hand was scribbling away and I was writing down, you know, the shelf marks of certain documents I wanted to request, which I did then later when I came home. And, you know, for a fee and for a commitment to use the right way, they will send you copies of the documents that you're looking for.
Okay.
So through that process, I began to discern what might have happened and how it might have arrived there.
Fantastic. Now, when we talk about Henry and Anne, of course, it's difficult not to wonder whether Henry ever regretted having Anne executed. I think we all want him to have regretted it, but, you know, so we wonder about that, whether he felt any remorse or anything like that. I'd love it so much if you could tell us about a little written reference that you found, which speaks of Henry's great grief on his deathbed.
I certainly will, which was, this was very, very shocking.
That's amazing.
It was that same afternoon in digging around, I found something that was in a collection of documents by somebody called Bishop White Kennett. And he was an antiquarian, and it was a large bound book of in his own handwriting called Biographical Memorials. And it was produced around 1715.
Okay.
And there was a folio in there labeled Original Correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a page dedicated to the death of Anne Boleyn. And it had various notations and writings. And down at the bottom, as I scanned, I see something. And the handwriting was early, but it was readable.
Right, okay, yep.
The 1500s where it's very difficult. And the following inscription was at the bottom of the page. The king acknowledges with great grief at his death the injuries he had done to the Lady Anne Boleyn and her daughter, as Thevet, in his Cosmography, a writer in no way partial hath testified.
Okay.
And I thought, what the
heck? Yeah, what's going on here?
What is that? It was then followed, that statement was followed by several lines in Old French.
Right.
So I got home, I requested a digital copy of it, I got it. So I was able to really examine it, and I was able to ask, because there was some Latin and some Old French, and I was able to ask some people that I know who can read that to help me discern it. And so this is what the paragraph said. The king acknowledges with great grief at his death the injuries he had done to the Lady Anne Boleyn and her daughter as Thevet, which is a name, in his cosmography, a writer in no way partial hath testified. Then the French, plusieurs gentilhomme anglois, says he, speaking of K. Henry's death, and the French is translated as, several English gentlemen have confided to me that he has repented upon his deathbed of the injustices done to Queen Anne Boleyn, of her having been falsely accused, and for the punishment imposed upon her, that she died in good Christian standing and is to be buried in accordance with the Church of Rome. It is in association with this ordeal situation that he, Henri, has attempted to right these injustices and with his whole heart signs his name to this testimony.
Wow.
So, Thevet is, as I researched, is André Thevet, a Franciscan friar who lived at the time of Henry VIII.
Okay.
And he was well-traveled and well-written, and he wrote a book called Cosmography Universelle, which is all in French, but he apparently spent time at the Franciscan Friary at Greenwich, you know, at the Palace of Placentia.
Yeah.
He apparently was well known to the nobles there, and so this is his writing. This is what he stated was told to him by several English gentlemen. So, you know, I have not been able to do more research into this. If there is anything else written by André Thevet, he was a person. He definitely spent time at the, you know, at the Friary of Greenwich. He was 31 years old when Henry died, which is certainly old enough to have been a confessor or, you know, an advisor to the noble.
Wow, this is so intriguing, isn't it? Oh my gosh.
You know, but, you know, you start to think about it and you think, why would he not have had remorse? You know, he was a human being. He certainly had his difficulties. And again, you know, off into another tangent, I have my theories about what ate at him and the reasons and, you know, reasons why he became the way he did. He had many people that he loved dearly put to death.
Yeah.
I mean, how could that not affect you in a terrible way? And we do know that, of course, part of his will and testament was that he did have Elizabeth reinstated to the line of succession. So, you know, who knows whether this is... And interestingly, the Franciscan friars were not reformers.
Right.
So they would not have had... So the statement... this testimony is written down by somebody in no way partial. This is not somebody who was a supporter of Anne's necessarily. He's reporting what he was told.
Goodness.
So there you have that.
It's just the tale just gets more intriguing and fascinating by the second. This is just amazing. Sandra, I think then, you know, I think listeners would want me to ask you this question. It is, I think, your belief that Anne did, in fact, have this letter dictated, the letter that we've been discussing from the Tower. What do you think are the most compelling sort of pieces of evidence to support this assertion? And do you think that the king ever received his wife's final letter?
Right. And this is, I think, where things get very intriguing and heartbreaking. So, you know, in putting the pieces together and doing additional research, and the reason that I decided to write this little book that I did was because It is a little bit convoluted and confusing, but what I believe happened was we know from Kingston that she asked to have a letter, you know, written, or she asked to write a letter to her husband, and Kingston said, you know, tell it to me and I will make it happen.
Yep.
I think he reported that back to Cromwell. I believe that Cromwell did not want her to write a private letter to Henry and seal it up, and nobody would know, and especially Cromwell would not know what was in there, and it would be delivered to Henry, and now Henry might capitulate.
Yeah.
And he might even return to her. Who knows? You know, without knowing what she wrote to him, Cromwell could not take that chance. They were so far down the road. Things were, you know, things were underway. So I believe that that Cromwell had somebody that he trusted implicitly, somebody who was beholden to him, and somebody that Anne knew, go to the Tower, also with this message saying, this is your last chance to confess, the postscript, and take her dictation. And I think that somebody wrote that. We know from the professor that I had been working with, it was not a professional scribe, because the writing is not that of a professional scribe. It is more of somebody who did write documents for part of their living, but was not, you know, a professional writer. And so I think that somebody took the dictation, took the letter back to Cromwell. And what is most interesting is that there are very early reports that say that the letter was found among Cromwell's personal papers after. So actually, Dr. McCulloch says, even though he doesn't speak to the letter, he says that he also believes that between Cromwell's arrest when he was being transported to the Tower and before the guards came to Austin Friars to seize his personal belongings, somebody in the household took his, and McCulloch puts it, you know, cleared out his in bin and his out bin.
Took
the papers that were the most private and disposed of them or hid them. And I believe that was Cromwell's executor, Rafe Sadler.
Right.
So, you know, that's my theory. That, and my theory may be that either he was the writer of the document, or that he accompanied whoever wrote the document at the Tower, brought it back. He was very trusted by Cromwell. He was his closest ally. And, you know, they stashed it. And I think it never saw the light of day until 1540.
And where does it, so where does it resurface after? So where do we find it in the more sort of modern times?
I think that this is where we don't...
Or is this where it gets quite muddled, isn't it?
We have an antiquarian, Lord Herbert of Sherbury, in 1580, 1590, I think, saying that he saw it. Saw it, and it was found in the papers.
Cromwell's
papers. He has that documented in his book, The Reign of Henry VIII. And so from there, you know, I developed a theory which actually almost unfolded itself to me. You know, I think Sadler, who was a great friend of William Cecil, Lord Burghley, I believe that Sadler gave it to Burghley. Burghley and Elizabeth had it. I think Burghley gave it to Elizabeth, and that Elizabeth had this letter of her mother's in her possession for the duration of her life. And I think at the end of her life and at the end of Burghley's life, Burghley had his very dear friend William Camden, who was the founder of the Society of Antiquaries, who loved and revered documents of importance. It was in his possession, and he was then the mentor of Sir Robert Cotton. And I believe that he bequeathed the letter to Cotton.
Yes.
And it was part of Cotton's collection. And it was in the collection during the Ashburnham House fire of 1731, along with Kingston's letters as well. But those documents are, that's why they're in the British Library today, because his collection, the Cotton Collection, is the foundation of the British Library.
Goodness, we suddenly owe him a great debt, don't we? Collecting all those amazing papers. Yeah. And so there really isn't any doubt. It's a 16th century letter, the original. Is that correct?
That's what I hold.
Mm. All right. Well, this
I'm getting amazing. Kind of better, more, some addition, not better, some additional looks at it.
Good. Excellent. See.
So, fantastic. Because it would be really fun if we could possibly figure out who described that.
It would be absolutely amazing. And I know you're working hard to get there. So thank you for all the hard work that you're doing.
It's one of the fun things.
It is. I know. It is quite fun. Now, while researching your novels, you had the privilege of seeing the love letters that Henry VIII wrote to Anne Boleyn during their courtship. Now, these reveal so much about Henry and Anne's relationship and are really unique among Henry's letters because they're not dictated. And we all know Henry hated handwriting his own letters. And they're not. These are written in his own very enamored and infatuated hands. Can you just tell us a little bit about this absolutely amazing experience?
Yes, and it was an out-of-body experience.
Oh, gosh, I can just imagine.
Trying to get admission. You know, the lovely people at the Vatican Library are very rightfully protective of the documents that are there. So in truth, I don't even know how I was able to accomplish this. It took a lot of work, but, I did get in there. I had to wait for hours to see whether they would provide me with the letters. They tried to talk me into just looking at a copy. Mm-hmm. And so, I kind of sat there and eventually out came this book and I opened it and I saw the very first page, which was Ma maestre et ami, my mistress and friend. Mm. And it was like, it almost brought tears to my eyes.
Oh, I would have been a mess.
And I thought, okay, he wrote these letters privately to her all those hundreds of years ago, and here I am, some woman from Gwynedd Valley, Pennsylvania, USA, but looking at them, it's just, it's just the strangest thing. But, I had a few hours to study them. And as I said, looking at original documents, there's so much to tell. Mm-hmm. From the progression of his handwriting, from the early letters to the later ones, it went from being very formal.
Right.
And very, like putting on your very best face to be very casual with splatters and smudges of his hand. And then the endearments that he started to use for her as time went on, and the jokes. I mean, he told jokes to her that were kind of bawdy jokes that were something that you would tell to somebody you were, who was your partner and you were in love with. So it was an amazing experience. And when the day came to an end and I gave them back, I walked out of there. I remember so distinctly that the first thought that I had in my mind was she loved him back.
Right.
Yeah. Loved him back, because you can see the progression. And I thought nobody would be writing in this way and acting in this way if they weren't getting something in response. Mm. So I really believe that this was a love story, obviously a love story that went wrong, but I think it was a true love story. The most poignant letter was the one that he wrote when he thought that she had the
sweating. Yeah.
It was absolutely just, you could see that it was written in panic. Mm. Just splatters, smudges, scratch out. It was just very, very, very moving. So,
oh my goodness, that's amazing. I know, I've seen the images of them, and even that is powerful enough, so I can just imagine what you were feeling when you were there, where, as you say, a little bit of their DNA, a little bit of their soul is in that particular letter, and you're there looking at it's just, wow, it's incredible.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing.
Touch things that that they both touched.
Yeah.
It's really an unbelievable privilege and just a very, very powerful communicator, I think, in ways.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I'm still hopeful that one day we may find one of Anne's responses somewhere. Who knows? Hidden somewhere in once a stately home somewhere or behind a cupboard. And, you know, these things happen. You hear the stories and you think, oh, my goodness, please let one of Anne's letters have survived.
So true. I mean, one of the reasons that I really felt that she loved him was that the letters were, arrived together. They were put in a book. They're pasted in a book together. Mm-hmm. And what that said to me is they were stolen, obviously.
They were stolen, that. Yeah.
But she kept them together. Mm-hmm. So this was not like, oh, here's another letter from Henry and throwing it on the table. And then here's another one. This is a woman who kept these love letters together. Mm. And so that says to me that they meant something to her.
Oh, of course. And I'm just thinking, what a story. Just how did the letters get to the Vatican? There's an amazing story hidden there, isn't there? But perhaps one day we'll find something.
Yes.
Sandy, amazing. Gosh, I'm so enjoying chatting with you. Are you working on any new Tudor books that you can tell us about?
Well, I'm working on I'm branching into a historical thriller. So I'm giving this a go. And it does actually begin with, and it's fiction, it begins with a double portrait of Anne and Henry at the cusp of the Reformation. And then that portrait goes missing in history. And there's somebody who's looking for it. And it's, you know, it evolves over time. So
that sounds so good.
Diligently working on it. I hope to have it finished sometime this year.
I'm sure if it's like any of your other novels, it's going to be amazing and thrilling.
That's awfully sweet of you. We'll see whether I'm up to that task.
And actually, the portrait idea is fantastic because obviously there was a full-length portrait of Anne at one point, which is which we've lost somewhere. So that's another mystery that needs solving, doesn't it?
It is.
Yep. All right, Sandy. Well, we're up to our little game of 10 to go.
Okay.
So just 10 quick questions, and I think listeners really love this part because they say they really get to know the person that I'm talking to, which is really lovely. So first thing, what's one thing that you love about where you live?
Oh, I love the Four Seasons. I love each one of them. Each of them makes me feel like it's my favorite, but I love the fall. I love them all. So,
I know.
We really get a lot of color on the trees in Pennsylvania in the fall. So that's
beautiful.
And I live in a historic area. So right near where the American Revolution happened.
Oh, there's so much history on the East Coast. I spent a month traveling there. And I was just, honestly, I couldn't believe the amount of history. It's amazing, absolutely amazing. Yeah. All right, so what's one of the best gifts you've ever received? A good present.
Oh, gosh. I've received a lot of beautiful things from people that I love and from my husband, but maybe the thing that comes to my mind is the day that I went to the Vatican Library and my husband came with me and saw me off to the Swiss guards at the gate and just waited for me there all day. Uh-huh. Didn't know whether I had gotten in or not. And when I came out and I was so out of body, and there he was just standing there waiting, and listening to every word. And that was just,
that is a precious gift. You're absolutely right. Now, if you could kind of come up with a fantasy travel itinerary, what would it be like? So anywhere, anything, money's not an option, not an issue. What would you do?
Right. Oh my gosh. Probably a stop off in Australia.
Yay.
A stop off in New Zealand. Some time in Italy on the coast or any place in Italy.
That'd be nice.
And then spending time in England, traveling in the footsteps of Anne Boleyn.
Yay. Oh, that sounds really good. I'd like to join you on that itinerary, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the last film that you saw?
Let's see. What was it? Oh, it was Mary, Queen of Scots.
Oh, you've seen it. I haven't seen it yet. It's not out here yet.
I saw it.
Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. I really did.
I'm looking forward to that one.
I love Saoirse Ronan. She was great.
Yeah, fantastic.
It was good.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Great. What is your favorite childhood book? Or a favorite? It doesn't have to be the favorite. A favorite?
There were many, but I loved, when I was really young, I loved the Madeline books. By Ludwig Bemelmans. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I loved the Laura Ingalls Wilder series.
Oh, lovely.
I read one of those. So
Excellent, yeah. Thank you. What is what brings you the greatest joy?
Oh my goodness. Family, friends, yeah. Relationships, and my adorable 2-year-old grandson.
That's so exciting.
He's an amazing joy in my life. And what everybody tells you, parenthood is fantastic, but grandparenthood is the bomb diggity.
Oh, wow, there's something to look forward to. Thank you very much. What does your writing space look like? I think I can see a little glimpse of it here.
You might be able to see some of it. I have a bedroom in my house converted into my she shed.
She shed.
I don't know what that, right. So I have all of my, I have photos in here. The closet has been turned into a little library, and I have some tapestries, and I have the tapestry hanging on the wall that I brought with me when we stayed in the room that Henry and Anne stayed in Thornbury Castle.
Oh,
so I brought the tapestry and I put it right in front of the hearth, and it got all the juju there of all the mojo.
Yeah, I love it. Juju.
Henry, now it's hanging on my wall, so I love it.
I know, and I'm lucky because I can see it, and it's beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, there you go. Right.
Now, what was I going to ask you? Oh, yes. What's one of your biggest pet peeves? So something that annoys you. Do you have anything that kind of gets under your skin a bit?
Oh, well, could I'm not going to go down the political route. So.
No, yeah, oh gosh.
since I won't
I
go,
feel for you, Sandy, I feel for you.
Yes. I would just say, people who are really inauthentic, maybe that. So.
Yeah, no, that's
But
fine.
I'm a pretty affable person, so not much gets under my skin.
Yeah, you're a lovely, lovely person. Lucky last, I think I'm on to 10, hopefully. Let's imagine you're having, a historical dinner party and you're inviting 5 people from history, anybody, any period. Who would you have?
Oh, gosh. Well, it would certainly be Anne.
Yes,
she
good.
Would be foremost. I would have to experience Henry.
Yeah, I think
so. I would have to see exactly what that whole dynamic was like. Mm. And then I would probably love to have maybe one of the couturiers of the early era, like maybe Coco Chanel.
Okay, yeah. That'd be an interesting mixture, wouldn't it?
It'll be a little bit of a mixture. I don't know. Let's see. Who else? It would be great to go back to early Roman times, maybe one of the Roman emperors.
That'd be cool.
Can I throw Jesus in there?
Yeah, let's throw Jesus
He'd
in.
He'd be in there. He would be in there. Yeah. Maybe then Buddha.
Yeah, that'd be an enlightening dinner party, I think. And I'd love to be there if you've got an extra space. Can I come too?
Definitely.
Just to watch that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, Sandy, we're up to our final, very last thing, our Tudor takeaway. Do you have something for us?
I certainly do. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to narrow it down because there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for today, I would like to offer the 3 fantastic, and there are so many wonderful books, but today I'm going to say, for any of the listeners who are interested in Tudor history and the whole expanse of it, the websites on the Tudor Trail,
thank you.
The Anne Boleyn Files, mm-hmm. QueenAnneBoleyn.com, and on social media, the fantastic Facebook and Instagram and Twitter sites, the Anne Boleyn Society.
Oh, yes.
So I recommend those so highly to everybody. They're wonderful. They change daily. There's so much information. There's resources. It's just, everything there in a nutshell. And they're great, and they're beautifully done by the people who run them. So
That's absolutely, and I know those lovely people that you've just mentioned there, and they're all wonderful and been working for at least a decade, many of those, to bring great content.
Yeah.
And thank you for including my website.
It's spectacular. It really, really is. It's been a treasure of mine for a number of years. So
Oh, thank you
thank you
so
for
much, Sandy. And thank you. I know you're writing your novel and it's hard when you've got other distractions. So I'm so grateful that you've taken the time to chat with me. And there's obviously lots more to come. So can you please keep us up to date?
I definitely will. I hope that there will be something to keep us up to date about. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and see what comes up about this. And I really, really thank you, Natalie, for the opportunity to chat about it today.
Oh,
It's really fun.
thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. You enjoy your evening.
You too. Take care.
Thanks. You too. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Talking Tudors. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any comments or suggestions or just want to say hi, please get in touch with me via my website, www.onthetudortrail.com, where you'll also find show notes for today's episode. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the podcast with friends and family and click on the all-important follow button so you'll never miss an episode. I also invite you to join our Talking Tudors podcast group on Facebook, where you can interact with other Tudor history lovers and hear all the behind-the-scenes news. It's time now for us to re-enter the modern world. As always, I look forward to talking Tudors with you again very soon.